Welcome to another edition of the Water Brothers Podcast. I'm Joe Kirshner, and I'm joined today by my brother Jay. And today we're going to be talking about conflict, and specifically how to resolve conflict that arises at water utilities. Now, conflict comes up at water and wastewater utilities in different ways, but oftentimes we see conflict between departments within an organization. And then there's conflict between individuals within the same department or even in other departments as well. So today we want to talk about how to resolve that conflict, because conflict can get in the way of progress, efficiency, and can be quite expensive. So take it away, Jay. Talk us through how to resolve conflict.
Sure. Before we get to that, I want to just kind of define what we mean when we're talking about conflict. Basically, we define conflict as a difference between your wants, your needs, and your expectations. And as you've said, Joe, workplaces are full of individuals and departments and teams that have different wants, they have different desires, they have different needs, and they have different expectations. So it's natural that conflict is going to occur in the workplace. Now, one of the things that we teach is that that conflict can either be an asset or a liability. And what we're hoping through this podcast, and definitely through the more extensive course that we teach, that we'll be able to provide some information on how you can take that conflict and resolve it effectively and come out on the other end of that conflict, making it an asset, something that benefits your organization, and just using it as an opportunity for collaboration, creativity, and solving complex problems and making your organization better.
Let me interrupt here. I'm going to go back to the definition of conflict. And oftentimes I'll make a distinction between a conflict that's required in the decision-making process, where you have, you know, different ideas as to the best course of action. And I would call that constructive conflict. But what we're going to be talking about here is what I guess we could call destructive conflict. And that's where people are at odds with one another, and the situation degrades to either name calling or other behaviors that are destructive in the workplace.
Right. Yeah. So we're going to talk about the destructive type of conflict and how to fix it, because that type of conflict can be very costly to your organization. And like I said before, the trouble isn't that conflict exists. It becomes destructive if it's not dealt with properly and if it's not resolved in a constructive manner. Okay. And so the impact on your workplace, it can have a devastating effect. It'll impact the people involved, the individuals involved, their colleagues. It'll involve different departments, and it could spread to the customers, and really it'll impact the organization as a whole if left unresolved. So some of the things that we've noticed and we've seen happen as a result of unresolved conflict is stress and frustration and anxiety among the workforce, which leads to strained relationships. If you're in an environment where unions are involved, oftentimes you'll see an uptick in the number of grievances that are filed. It may even lead to litigation, high employee turnover, and a loss of productivity.
Yeah, conflict really can be stressful, and it can show up in these different areas that you just listed, Jay. Now, the list you just gave us, though, didn't involve the issue of cost.
Yes, these symptoms of unresolved conflict can cause a significant but often hidden cost for your organization. It might show up in reduced quality of the decisions that you make as an organization. It might show up as ineffective communication. It might demonstrate itself through power struggles as different work units don't get along. And if you add all of this to the emotional and the relationship costs that result from the conflict, there is a tremendous real cost to an organization.
Well, ain't that the truth, Jay? I remember one time I was working at a utility, and there was a conflict between a couple of departments. One department had as one of their pieces of equipment a backhoe, and the other department needed to borrow the backhoe, but because of the conflict, they wouldn't loan this backhoe. Now, it's kind of silly because the utility owned the backhoe, not the department. But nevertheless, there was this constant struggle because of conflict that was unresolved that made it so that the department without the backhoe just put money in the budget and spent about $80,000 to get their own backhoe. So rather than sharing, it ended up costing about $80,000 so that they didn't have to deal with the conflict. They could just, you know, ignore the conflict and spend money.
Well, I'll do you one better on that, Joe. I was teaching a class. I don't have personal experience with this, but I was sharing a similar story to your backhoe story with the group. We were talking about resolving conflict. And one of the individuals, he worked on the water side. He worked for a city, and they had a water treatment as well as wastewater collections and treatment. And he told the story about how the sewer department had, you know, several of the big Vactor trucks, those hydro excavators that they would use for, you know, cleaning out the collection lines. And the water department needed to borrow one, or they wanted to borrow one, to expose some of their distribution lines for some maintenance. And because of a conflict between the managers of each of those departments, the sewer department would not loan that hydro excavator to the water department. So rather than, you know, sit down, resolve the conflict, figure out how the different wants, needs, and expectations or the desires, how they can work it out to where everybody would get what they want, the water department just went out and spent a couple $100,000 on the new hydro excavator.
Yeah, well, that's one way to solve it, I guess. I mean, it doesn't really solve it, but well, there you have it.
Yep. So before we get into some solutions, how to resolve conflict, I want to just share some statistics with you, and maybe some of our listeners can relate to this. But the percentage of performance problems that are related to interpersonal problems or conflict between employees is 65%. So that was based on a survey by Organization Development Journal. They say that 65% of all your performance problems within your organization can be traced back to unresolved conflict or interpersonal problems between individuals. All right, so the next statistic, 42%, that's the amount of a manager's time that's spent resolving problems, clarifying expectations, and mediating these disagreements between employees.
Wow.
So
talk about major time loss.
Right. So you're losing not only the time involved for the manager, but the individuals involved, but then going back to the stress, the frustration, the anxiety, it really puts a drain on people, which puts a drain on productivity, which ultimately ends up costing the organization. 50%, that's the percentage of employees who report leaving an organization due to conflict. Now, this might be a conflict between the supervisor and the employee, or it might be a peer-to-peer conflict. But people, generally speaking, like to avoid conflict. Most people, our default setting is to avoid conflict. There are those rare individuals that like to create conflict and they thrive on it. Mm-hmm. But most people want to avoid it. And one of the easiest things to do is just to leave, which leads to the next statistic, which is the last one, 75 to 150%. That is the percentage of an individual's salary that it costs to recruit and train a replacement. So those people that leave due to conflict, if you have unresolved conflict in your organization, half of the people that leave your organization are going to leave because of that conflict. That doesn't mean half of your people will leave, but of those that leave, half of them leave because of conflict. So if you leave it unresolved, you're going to have to replace and train them, and that's going to cost you about a year's salary in order to do that.
Wow, that does start adding up and gets pretty expensive. Well, so can you give our listeners some steps that they can take then to help staff resolve conflict? I mean, where do we go from here?
The first thing we want to do is we want to understand that there's a difference between an issue. I'm going to give you three words: an issue, a position, and an interest. And it's important for us as mediators and those that are called upon to resolve conflict to really draw a distinction between these three and ultimately work to get to the last one, the interest. So let me just define them for you real quick. So an issue, that's the point or the matter of discussion. That's the debate. That's what the dispute is about. So a simple example would be there might be a dispute over overtime pay. So staff might have a different view than management about overtime pay. So that's an issue. The next keyword is position. What is your position? What's your stance or your point of view as it relates to that issue? So a party's position is the what. So in our example with overtime pay, we might say, well, my position would be I should be paid time and a half for working over 40 hours in a week. Some people I know in California, it's not only 40 hours in a week, but their position would be I should be paid overtime if I work more than 8 hours in a day. So that's the position. The issue is overtime pay. The position is what do I think it should be? What's my stance or my point of view as it relates to that issue? The most important thing that we need to realize, if you don't remember these words, that's fine. You don't have to remember issue, position, and then finally interest. But always try to get to the why.
I'm glad you said that, Jay, because I was sitting here thinking, you know, boy, this might be hard to remember, but what's the one thing that we need to get to the bottom of a conflict? And I think you're hitting on it right now.
Yeah, exactly. I struggle to remember these words if I don't have them written down in front of me. But the point is this. You want to get to the underlying desire, the need, the concern, whatever it is that underlies that person's position. You want to get to their why. Why is it important that I be paid 40 hours and or paid overtime if I work more than 40 hours in a week? Or why is it important that you be paid overtime if you work 40 hours in a week? And, you know, what's the reason why? So in our example, an example might be, I just want to be treated fairly. I don't want to be taken advantage of. If you're going to ask me to work long hours, spend time away from my family, not be able to coach baseball or, you know, whatever your outside interests are, I want to be treated fairly. And if you're going to ask me to work an extended work day or an extended work week, I want to be compensated fairly. So that's when you head into a mediation setting or you're trying to resolve conflict, you always want to work to get to the why. Why is it that they hold this position? Why don't they want to share the hydro excavator? Why don't they want to share the backhoe? And if you can resolve, you know, find some resolution around that why, then you're going to be well on your way to resolving conflict.
Yeah. Now, in the case of the backhoe, you know, the stated reason why initially wasn't really the real reason. So are you going to talk about going below the surface?
Yeah, that's common. Most of the times people will give you their position, but it doesn't really give you – and we don't do a good job as the managers and the supervisors at uncovering the why. So let me just give you a four-step process, and then we'll go through each step one at a time. So step number one, you want to restate – you know, let me, before we get to step one, we want to lay some ground rules, and we want to bring the parties who are involved in the conflict together, and we want to establish some rules about where we're not going to make personal attacks. We're going to focus on issues. We're going to attack the problem, not people. And we're going to look to find where we have some common ground, where we can agree and move forward from there. Okay, so we want to make sure that it's a safe environment, no personal attacks, and we're really trying to solve the problem, to resolve the conflict that exists.
Okay, so if I've got two people that are in conflict, and maybe I'm the supervisor of these two people, before we have a meeting, would I go to each of them individually and lay this groundwork or set down the ground rules, or how would I go about doing that?
Well, there's a number of different ways you can handle it. The way I can give you the way I prefer to handle it, and I will generally talk with the individuals one at a time. And I'll go to party A and say, "I want to get you together with party B," and just talk about this. And then I'll lay out what are the ground rules? Here's how the meeting's going to go, and then I get a commitment to them that they would agree to go by the ground rules that we lay out. And even if they want to, this is their opportunity to say, hey, can we make sure we talk about, you know, A, B, or C, or make sure we don't address this. And then once we get together, after I've spoken with each person individually, then we come to the meeting. Everybody comes with the as close to the same expectations as is possible. We'll reiterate what we're trying to accomplish, what are the ground rules, and then we'll start into this four-step process. So step number one, you want to restate each party's position and empathize with their respective situations. You don't want to be thinking that one's right, one's wrong. You just want to paraphrase what you hear the other person saying, and make sure you check your perceptions and any unspoken assumptions that you might have. You want to keep your feelings and all that to yourself. You want to remain neutral. And what you're trying to do here is to establish a trusting and a collaborative atmosphere and environment where a good discussion can take place, and just be so that the other people will be willing to hear all perspectives. So step number one, restate the party's position and empathize with their respective situations. Step number two, you want to discover each party's underlying interest. Okay, remember, it's not enough just to hear, I want to be paid more if I work overtime, or whatever the situation is. You want to get to the why. So what is that underlying interest? You do that by asking probing questions. Ask open-ended questions. Ask questions that don't allow for a simple yes, no, or a single word answer. You want to keep asking why. Sometimes one technique that I like to ask or use is the five whys. If they give you an answer, ask why. Why is that important? It's important because of this. Well, why is that important? And keep asking why, you know, up to five times until you fully uncover what is the underlying interest. You want to get below the surface. You want to find out what each party is truly interested in. Step number three, you want to start to propose options without asking for commitments. All right. You do this, you want to ask for proposals from them, or you want to make proposals yourself that you think might resolve part or all of the issue. If it's a complex issue, you might just start working, solving, you know, break it into pieces and solve them one at a time. Or if it's, you know, there's just one underlying issue that you need to get to, then you might start making proposals. And it can be a collaborative effort. You as the mediator can make the proposal. You can ask for proposals from the other participants. Now, you're doing this because you want to explore a variety of possible solutions, maybe make a list, put them on a whiteboard, write them down on a piece of paper. But you want to do this without any undue pressure or a need to make an immediate resolution. All we're doing at this stage is we're just looking for some possible solutions. And then step four, you want to start to build small agreements until you end up with a complete agreement. Now, you do this because, like I said earlier, you might want to break it up into stages and just work toward a full solution by breaking it up into smaller parts. How do you do this? By breaking it up, dealing with the underlying issues one at a time, focus on areas where you agree, not where you disagree, and then look for additional opportunities where you can agree and take one more step closer to resolving the conflict.
You know, this process really does work, Jay. I've used it various times. And, you know, to kind of recap, you know, you restate each party's position and, you know, just empathize with them and let them understand that you understand their situation. And you ask probing questions to try to discover the underlying interest. And then, like you said, you allow them to propose solutions. And if they don't have any solutions, then you can propose some. And then you focus on those areas of agreement and work towards an ultimate solution. This reminds me of a time when I was running a lab. I had a couple lab analysts that didn't feel the work was distributed evenly. And, you know, we got together and I started asking questions and I asked them to propose the solutions. And during the course of the discussion, and let me backtrack, you know, we or I kind of set the stage and said, no, we're not going to, you know, name call. We're not going to be using derogatory language or anything like that. Our goal is to make sure that the workload is shared evenly. And both agreed that that's what they wanted. So we had an initial agreement that the outcome was to be a positive one. So with that as the backdrop, we just had a discussion. And I kind of led the discussion, and they started proposing solutions. And what ultimately ended up happening is once each individual realized the work that the other individual was doing that they hadn't mentally given them credit for, they realized that, okay, that other person is actually doing some work. And when I interjected and said, well, would you like to take this load from, you know, him, or do you want to take this load from him? And, you know, back and forth. And it was determined that each one liked the work that they were doing and the way that the work was distributed, because it fit their personality type. And, you know, one was more hands-on tinkering, liked to be outside. Another one liked doing the analyses and manipulating the data and that type of thing. So it really ended up to where no change was made. However, the conflict was resolved once each party understood the other party's contribution to the overall functioning of the lab. So using this framework to start the conversation and guide the conversation really does work. And I think once the conversation happens, that's when these conflicts can be resolved.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Joe. I don't know that I could have summed it up any better. And I've used this framework in similar situations with similar results. So since I don't really have anything else to add, why don't we wrap up this podcast? So for American Water College, I'm Jay.
And I'm Joe.
And we are the Water Brothers. We'll talk to you soon.